afternoon. It's February 24th, 3:30. This is the Senate Education Committee. Present today will be Senator Gardner, Senator Huggins, Senator Giesel. I anticipate Senator Stevens here shortly, and I'm Senator Dunleavy. Today we have two items that we're going to be hearing. One is SCR 1 by Senator McKinnon. It's GO bonds for student loans. And then we'll have a presentation by Diane Burns on the Alaska Performance Scholarship Program and the Alaska Education Grant Program. And Ms. Burns is the Director of the Post-Secondary Commission on Education. So with that, if I could have Senator McKinnon, whomever else she wants to come forward, please state your names for the record, who you're associated with, and please begin your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chairman Dunleavy, members of the Education Committee. It's a pleasure to introduce to you today Senate Joint Resolution 2, a constitutional amendment that proposes to try to reduce student loan debt, or at least the interest rate that a student would pay on loans. Mr. Chairman, our forefathers could not have anticipated the debt required to get an education in today's world, let alone America. Right now, Alaskan students disproportionately carry a much higher interest rate than the federal rate. Currently, the state of Alaska's interest rate is 6.7%, and the federal interest rate is 4.66%. It's my understanding that should this joint resolution go forward, that the state of Alaska would, on the 2016 ballot, ask voters to approve a change in our Constitution that would allow debts and the full faith and credit of the state of Alaska to be used to back that debt for student loans. Currently under Article 9, Section 8 of the Constitution, the only thing that we can use the full faith and credit of the state of Alaska for is capital improvements. And then there was an amendment to our Constitution to allow housing loans for veterans. This would be a third amendment to that section that would allow student loan debt, which is backed by revenue that the students pay for their loans. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'm here to answer questions and take anything that you have to heart with how you feel about this piece of legislation.
Questions from members of the committee. Senator.
Thank you, and I know we've heard this kind of testimony before, but I need a refresher, and that is, how do we currently set the interest rates, and what kind of flexibility do we have when we set them for student loans through your shop?
Through the chair, for the record, this is Diane Behrens, the executive officer of the Alaska Student Loan Corporation. To your question, Senator Gardner, the board of the corporation sets the interest rates annually. The method by which the rate has set has varied over the years, but the essential components of it are the cost of funds plus some additional percentage to cover the cost of servicing or the cost of the program itself. The other costs that are included in that beyond the actual cost of servicing the loans would be some consideration to cover the losses on those loans as well. And loans are written off relative to the death of the borrower, a permanent 100% disability, or simply by virtue of not being able to collect on a loan that's not performed for an extensive period of time. So those two components are factored into the way in which the rate is set, or the rate at which interest is set.
Sir.
Thank you. And so in follow-up, do we as a state, or does the agency, make money based on our current loan rates when all the costs are calculated and the cost of running the program and some aspect of the defaults covered? Do we have an even playing field? Are we in the hole or are we ahead?
Right. Through the chair, Senator Gardner, it is not the goal of the corporation to make money. We do have to have a sustainable structure. I would tell you that if you did a look back over 20 years of the corporation's history, you would see the net income to the corporation vary really quite greatly from less than $1 million in a given year to as many as high as $12 million in a year. Now, we haven't experienced that kind of net income to the corporation in over a decade. So it has varied, and the way in which that net income is distributed has varied over the years. In 2001, state statute was actually amended to permit the corporation to pay a dividend or a return of contributed capital to the state. Since that law was put in place, the corporation has returned over $31 million in payments to the state. The state was the original capital source for the corporation, and so it was deemed appropriate that in any year that we had a net income of $2 million or more, the board might consider that. Since the downturn of the markets, which triggered the Great Recession in the United States, the board has not elected to return a dividend to the state. Typically, in many of those years, we didn't have $2 million in net income, but it was felt that given our inability to access the financial markets at an inexpensive level, that we needed to retain the cash assets that the corporation had to make new loans and to pay for the cost of servicing. So that's been the practice since 2009.
Thank you.
Do you have a question? Senator Beasley.
So I got a student loan back in the dark ages when I went to college, and most of my colleagues did not pay back their loans. What is the default rate for Alaska students?
Yes. Through the chair, Senator Giesel, we live in a new era in terms of the student loans. Back in the day, the 80s, the early 90s, the program experienced default rates that were in excess of 27%. Our current default rate is less than 6.5%, and that varies, but it has been in the single digits for a number of years now.
Why is that, do you think?
Mr. Chairman, I just was going to add that the permanent fund dividend is third in line as far as garnishment goes, so it's increasing our ability to recoup payments into that system, but I'll let Ms. Behrens continue.
Yes, Mr. Chair, there are a number of factors that have enabled us to both increase the collection on defaulted loans and lower the default rate itself. As Senator McKinnon points out, we have some tools, some collection tools that the legislature has given us in statute. One of the most effective has been the ability to garnish a permanent fund dividend. Over the years, we've collected in excess of $112 million on defaulted loans. That certainly helps us with our recovery on defaulted loans. But with respect to the default rate itself, there are a number of contributing factors. In the late 80s through early 1990s, there were a number of it was sort of a proliferation of for-profit institutions in the state. At one point, there were over 140 institutions in the state that delivered all sorts of training programs that, in retrospect, probably was not a valuable investment for a young person to go into debt for. We also had a mindset relative to the fact that when students borrowed the loans, they expected that they would only have to pay back at the most 50% because they would get forgiveness. Mm-hmm. And so it really wasn't treated as a legitimate debt like their car loan or a credit card loan. So there was a mindset that I think was a factor. And then finally, we, in the mid-90s, began to constitute various levels of underwriting standard. We initially started in the mid-90s with a sort of a credit-ready standard. If a person didn't have credit, they could get a loan. As long as they didn't have adverse credit, they could get a loan without a creditworthy cosigner. But then in the wake of the of the sort of the fallout from the market collapse in 2007 and 8, we did have to increase that credit criteria to having positive credit or a cosigner with positive credit.
So, before I forget, Senator, the current interest rate is how much again?
It is 6.7% for the 2014-15 year.
And the hope is to get it down to what through this process? Because that's what we're talking about. This is 6.7% to the individual getting the loan.
That's correct.
And the hope is to get it down. How will this process get it down to a certain level? And what is that certain level that is expected to provide? I don't know. What is the level we're going for?
Mr. Chairman, Senator McKinnon, Eagle River, and some of the bases. Right now, the delta is between 1 and 1.3% that we would hope to gain on that. It is variable depending on the bond market itself and what's available. It provides a better rating so that the corporation could borrow at a lower interest rate to provide those loans.
Okay, and who would set the rate? How would the rate be set through this? Would it be any different than how we set the rate now?
Mr. Chair, it wouldn't be different, but the cost factors that were available, the reduced costs that would be available to the board in setting that rate would simply be lower. As Senator McKinnon points out, we expect that our cost of funds would be between 1 and 1.3% lower. So when, you know, calculating what interest should be, that would directly benefit borrowers.
So the legislature capitalized the fund in 87 to the tune of $60 million, and then in 87, actually, they capitalized it to $350 million. There was $350 million in 87. Does that sound right?
Mr. Chair, in 1987, about $260 million in loan assets were turned over to the corporation to capitalize them. Between 1988 and 2000, in 1994, there were small infusions of cash that brought the total contribution from the state to the corporation to $306 million.
Okay, and how much is in there now?
The portfolio is approximately $460 million at this time. If I could, Mr. Chair, the other point that I would make is in addition to the annual return of capital or dividend payments that the corporation made between 2001 and 2008, in 2004 and 2005, loan assets were used to issue capital project bonds. We issued, approximately $150 million in bonds. The proceeds from those bonds were turned over to the state and were used to finance sewer projects, road projects, various capital projects of the state. So the total return on the state's investment right now, if you will, is over $192 million that the Student Loan Corporation has effectively returned to the state.
Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Behrens, I'm looking at the list of institutions that have taken loans out. And one I've never heard of, Trendsetters. What do they do?
Chair.
The chair is correct, Senator Huggins. They train in hair cutting.
Okay, so I see that four people that got the performance scholarship did Trendsetters. Wow. I'm looking at a term AEG. I got that. What's
yes.
AEG?
The Alaska Education Grant is a needs-based grant. Trendsetters is an authorized institution in Alaska, and so they can participate in both the student loan and the grant program. They have not sought to participate in the performance scholarship, however, so the aid information that you have is relative to individuals receiving the needs-based grant.
Yes. So, Mr. Chairman, I'm glad to see there's a long list of institutions that are the loans are available to in one form or another. And, you know, quite frankly, yesterday I was watched the other body debate school choice, and there was more comments about choice and what wasn't, and I got totally confused, and it appears that when it comes to scholarships, you have choice. Is that, would that be a good description? Except it's only in-state.
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, that's correct. Although the loan is portable, the scholarship and grant is not. But if your child were going to the University of Washington, they could borrow from the state loan program to attend there.
Okay. And one more follow-up,
yes.
Mr. Chairman. So if I went to UAA, which appears to have by far the largest number of recipients, and I went abroad, there's nothing that prohibits me from enjoying the scholarship piece for a semester or a year if that was part of the curriculum. Is that accurate?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, I believe if it is a formal exchange program where your credits are accruing to your degree at the University of Alaska, that would be correct.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make sure I understand correctly. The loans and the grants go to individual students who use them at an institution they select. Is that correct? It's not the institution that gets them.
Through the chair, Senator Gardner, the funds are dispersed through the institution to the individual. The institution is required to certify that the student meets all applicable requirements. Uh-huh.
But to the extent that something is a loan and has to be paid back, it's the student who's borrowed the money, not the institution, correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator Gardner, that's correct.
Thank you. And then also, I think on the issue of exchange programs, when the institutions on both sides, the homeschool and the other, have a relationship, there isn't tuition paid. But if a student at UAA says, oh, I'm just going to go to Rome for a year and pay that, they pay their tuition, then it's different. They have to pay whatever Rome charges, unless their school sends them there.
You also have Wichita and Whammy, and I think Wichita and Wheel were related.
Wheel, Wichita, Whammy, speaking Indian.
Mr. Chair, there are several student exchange programs through the Western Interstate Commission on Higher Education. You're correct. The Western Undergraduate, which is WUI, and the Professional Student Exchange Program, and the Graduate Regional Exchange Program. However, a student could not take the scholarship or grant funds to
right.
participate in those.
Question, there's no fiscal note. When I ran a constitutional amendment last year, there was a fiscal note of $1,500 for the purpose of publishing the ballots in the publication. So it appears that the fiscal note that I read here is that they're going to absorb it within a division of elections?
Mr. Chairman, that's my understanding. The issue is it depends on when you introduce a bill, and so once they move to a second page of a bill, it becomes an issue of a second page. And so if they, I believe, in consideration how many things are going to be on the ballot, this bill is out first, and so it's never good to assume, but my understanding is the department will absorb those costs. They actually roll them in, all the costs, into a bond proposition for the students to repay at a later date.
Okay. Additional questions for members of the committee?
Yep. Mr. Chairman, one.
Senator Huggins.
One more question. Ms. Behrens, describe to me the scenarios in which the state loses money with this initiative.
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, if properly structured, the state should not have any cost to the general fund at all. What we would do is structure these bonds as the corporation structured bonds from 1988 through 2008 so that there were sufficient cash flow thrown off the portfolio to adequately cover debt service on the bonds and the cost of servicing. We don't intend to structurally change that. I would note that the state the Student Loan Corporation actually carries a moral obligation of, under our current statutes, a moral obligation whereby if the corporation was not in a position of repaying its own bonds, that we would present to the legislature a request for funding to cover the debt service on those bonds. So while there is a material difference in between a general obligation and a moral obligation, I think conceptually this really isn't proposing a change with a any sort of material risk, if you will. Did I answer your question?
You did.
Yes.
One more question, and help me out if it's an ignorant one, but I'll ask it. The chart I'm looking has AEG program, talk about that, APS, Performance Scholarship. It doesn't have the Scholars Program. Why is it not one, why in a third category?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, the University of Alaska Scholars Program is funded and administered by the university. The commission has no role in funding or administering that program.
So you, yes. Mr. Chairman, so you can't get a supplemental loan if for whatever reason, you know, the scholars program is not adequate for you to be able to exist on educationally?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, you absolutely can. The supplemental loan is available to cover the unmet cost of attending your post-secondary program.
Thank you. Senator Gardner.
Thank you. And I'm trying to look at it from a bigger picture and just see if I'm following this. You said that the state has contributed over time since the inception about $306 million.
Through the chair, Senator Gardner, a small portion of that was cash. The rest was the outstanding loans that were made when the state funded the program straight from the general fund. So that portfolio was turned over to the corporation, and the corporation used the income off of those to pledge against the bonds that it began to issue in 1988.
Okay, so there was a state investment of, say, $306 million. Roughly.
Mm-hmm.
And the value of it now in the portfolio is $460 million?
Through the chair, Senator Gardner, you really can't equate the original portfolio size to the current portfolio size. Bear in mind that approximately, the last time I looked, the state had funded in loans overall something like $1.6 billion in student loans since the mm-hmm. program was established in 1968. The outstanding portfolio is just the outstanding portfolio of loans. In order to look at the full, and I would have to get back to you on this, in order to look at the full value of the corporation, you would need to look at not only the portfolio of loans, but the corporation's investments as well. And the corporation has several million dollars in investments that are pledged to the portfolios in addition to pledged to the trust, in addition to the loans themselves.
If we consider loans to students, Alaskans, to be an investment, what other kinds of investments does the trust make? I mean, the effort is really to fund student education, right?
We could certainly provide you with information through the chair. I'm sorry, Senator Gardner. We can certainly provide you with identification of the Student Loan Corporation's investment portfolio. And they're in very conservative, low return investments, government contracts, that sort of thing. That we don't invest in, for instance, real estate or sort of venture capital type things. They're very conservative investments.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, what I'm trying to understand in my own mind is if there's profit here, if we're profiting by charging interest rates that are too high, you know, if we lowered our interest rates and profited less, would students be better off? But maybe, yeah.
Yes. through the chair, Senator Gardner, what the corporation has done is it has created a set of, over time since 2002, a set of borrower benefits that are annually reviewed. These are, at least most recently, they are an opportunity to lower the cost to the student by creating credits for various reasons. For instance, on the 6.7% interest rate that we're currently charging for the 2014-15 year, we have a what we call an Alaska presence discount, a credit of 0.5%. So if you're going to school in Alaska, or if you're repaying your loan in Alaska, the rate on your loan is reduced by 0.5%, bringing it down to, so that would be 6.2%. In addition to that, the corporation has approved for the current year a 0.25% percent discount for individuals who are in repayment, and they're using online automated repayment that saves money for the corporation through servicing, but that actually drops the interest rate on the loans to below 6% for those who are living in Alaska and repaying in Alaska. They have to be in good standing in repayment, but that is what the corporation typically does to the extent it has financial capacity to do so. So I think if you look at that approach, it's clear that the corporation is, the goal is to ensure that we remain in the black, that we can cover operational costs, that we can be viewed as a sustainable enterprise to the financial markets, and it's really to achieve those goals and really not do more. In fact, when the legislation went through in 2001 to create the capacity to do a return to the state, it was very clear in the hearings at that time that those payments would only be made to the state when doing so did not put at risk our ability to meet our core mission. And so I think if in totality, if you looked at the rates that the borrowers were paying during some of those same years, you would see that their rates are some of the lowest that we've had in history. And generally, those low rates were driven by sort of ideal market circumstances where there were variable rate opportunities for debt, variable rate bonds that had very low rates. Those low rates were passed right along to the borrowers who were borrowing at that time. So in terms of the interest rate environment, timing is everything. If you were borrowing from us in 2002, 2003, the interest rate on your loan to this day, because it resets according to the way it was financed, less than 3%. Unfortunately, those opportunities, those market instruments have not been available to us, and we don't really expect to see a return of that.
Mm-hmm. Senator McCann.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to point out two things. First, this particular proposal would go before voters, and we wouldn't be able to actually trigger a mechanism until after the voters approved the change to the Constitution, and then it would come back to policymakers again to scrutinize any kind of investment in an additional bond before it was put out to voters a second time in the 2018 election cycle, and the first loan that a student could benefit from would be in 2019. So this is very forward-thinking in response to market conditions. And the reason why I bring it to your attention is because this is one tool that that we don't currently have on refinancing high interest rate loans that or bonds that are out there. That may have an expense that makes it something that we wouldn't do, but it could, under the right conditions, create an opportunity for those students that may have higher cost loans to actually reduce those loans with the leverage of our bonding capacity and the current assets that we have. Mr. Chairman, secondly, I wanted to make sure that I put on the public record that I am a co-signer on one of my son's loans. I would not benefit any differently than anyone else. In fact, with the date out at the first student benefiting in 2019, I doubt that my son would see a benefit because I'm actually able to try to help him pay the one loan that I co-signed on. But I did want to make it a public record that there could be an appearance of a conflict of interest. I don't believe it's there. I don't believe my son will benefit from anything that we're talking about today, but as a parent, I'm trying to support him in his efforts to pay off those student loans.
Thank you. And also let the record show that Senator Stevens is here. I knew there would be some bleed over, and that was one of the reasons why I wanted to put the resolution aside just for a couple days so that we can zero in now on the other two loan programs. The second part of this committee hearing today, kind of bleeding over into it. But it'll give us an opportunity to really thoroughly understand how the loan concept works, how it's been capitalized. And then we can pick the bill up here in just a short period of time and bring it back for a second reading. And
Mr. Chairman, I just didn't know if there was any general public that had thought you were going to take public testimony. I don't know what your intent is today. So
yeah.
Sometimes we have someone specifically in a region that may be in opposition, and I always like to make sure that people both in support and opposition have an opportunity to speak if we've noticed something. So I'm not sure your intent. I'm happy to step away from the microphone.
Yeah, no, we were going to, that would be our next step, is to ask if there is public testimony. And we do have somebody that's signed on, but that individual's already testifying right next to you.
Oh, thank you.
So are there any questions at this point before I open it up for public testimony? Any additional questions? So is there anyone online that wishes to testify at this time? No. And the only individual that we have signed up is Diane, if I'm reading this correctly.
Yeah.
It's Diane. So is there anyone in the room that wishes to testify? We're going to leave public testimony open. And like I said, we'll get back to the bill. We're going to take a minute break here, but then move into our second half of our meeting today and get some questions answered on the loan concepts and of the two grant programs. So let's just take a second and transition. We're back in session. We're moving to the second half of the meeting, which, again, is the Alaska Performance Scholarship Program, the Alaska Education Grant Program. Again, we have Diane Behrens, Director of the Post-Secondary Commission on Education. Diane, once again, just for this section, could you please identify yourself for the record and who you represent?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Diane Behrens. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education.
Thank you. And you want to begin your presentation, and then we'll ask you some questions?
Certainly. What I have for you today, Mr. Chair, is actually very brief. I did mention to your staff that if you wanted sort of a deep dive into the 2015 Alaska Performance Scholarship Outcomes Report, I could certainly have the report author available to do a detailed look at that. However, what I did prepare and provide, I think each of you have copies of it, are relative to the Alaska Performance Scholarship. We have a two-sided, what we call infographic, that just has some of the highlights from the 2015 report.
Could you show this? Could you show it to us again, please? Thank you. Yes.
And in the infographic, what we sought to do was to indicate you know, high level, what is happening with the Alaska Performance Scholarship? As certainly the members of this committee are very familiar with, the Performance Scholarship was considered an invitation to excellence to Alaska students and schools. It's a merit-based program that provides an opportunity for students to annually receive up to $4,755 based on the level of award for which they have qualified. In the infographic, we've got several data points, but I think that for me, the primary takeaway is that the APS program is increasing statewide. The use of the Performance Scholarship is increasing statewide. One of the points of concern, I think, that led to the establishment and the overwhelming support for this program was the concern that the kind of the best and brightest of our students were migrating to institutions in the lower 48, and as a result of spending a number of years there, were putting down roots and remaining there rather than returning to Alaska and being part of our the fabric of our state. So we're pleased to see that the number of students using the award has been fairly stable, but in the top tier of the or the level one award, as it's called, we're actually seeing the largest increase in use in that level. So we consider that to be a positive sign. We're also seeing the effects of the rigor of the required curriculum in terms of the much lower rates of a need for remediation for those who do participate in the program in Alaska. If you compare those who are APS eligible with those who are not, just about 1 in 6 or 17%, not quite 17% of those, do require at least one remedial course in their first year. But when you compare that to the 50% of non-eligible students who require some form of remediation in their first year, it poses a sharp contrast. The students who are receiving the scholarship are taking more credits. Now, that is a requirement of the program if they're a full-time student that after their freshman year in college, they have to increase their credit load to at least 30 credits a year to continue to be eligible. And so they are taking substantially more credits than the students who are not APS eligible. So it is incenting and rewarding that behavior. In terms of the rate at which APS recipients persist in their program or remain in their program, 75% of those that began in the first year of the program, who are now in their fourth year, have persisted. That's compared to their non-eligible classmates who began that same year, who only 40% of them have persisted. So I think these are strong indicators that the program, even in these first few years, is beginning to deliver the results that you hope for when authorizing this investment in our young people.
Questions from members of the committee? I have one. What is the amount that the fund is capitalized at right now?
Mr. Chair, I get that number updated once a year from the Department of Revenue. The last I saw, it was in excess of $444 million. It may have been $446 million, and that's just for comparators. The original set-aside by the legislature in 2011 was $400
million. Okay, thank you. So I'm looking on the first infographic. It says level one, level two, level three down the bottom left-hand side. So in order for a student to receive up to $4,755, they would have to have a 3.5 and a score of 1680. If they had 3.5 but did not have a score of 1680, then what do? They fall to the second category?
It would depend on what their score was, Mr. Chair. So the score would determine. It's very possible that, it is possible that a student may have had a 3.5 GPA but not scored sufficiently high to receive an APS at all.
Interesting. And conversely speaking, could somebody have had very poor grades but scored very high on the assessment and receive the scholarship?
No, Mr. Chair, they would not have. They would have to have all of the pieces. They had to have taken the core curriculum. They would have had to have taken the scored well enough to get one of the three levels, and their GPA would have had to have supported that award as well.
And if you're a private school individual, are you an Alaskan resident, are you eligible for the scholarship?
You may be, Mr. Chair. If you can document through a process that the Department of Education has in place that you satisfied each of the three criteria, then yes, you would be considered an eligible APS recipient. We haven't had a large population of private students, private school students who have qualified, but we've certainly had them every year.
And if you're a homeschool student not associated with any public school program, can you, as an Alaskan citizen, can you be eligible for the scholarship as well?
Through that same process, Mr. Chair, I believe that is correct.
And if you are an individual that has completed school 3 years ago or whenever, and you don't apply for the scholarship for another 4 or 5 years, are you still eligible?
You are not, Mr. Chair. There is a window of time after the year that you would have graduated from high school. That is a six-year window during which you would have had to have used your eligibility.
So six-year window, and there's no exceptions if you went into the military and et cetera, et cetera.
Mr. Chair, in the statute, the State Board of Education can create an extension opportunity. To date, the regulation that has been promulgated really speaks to students who have begun a course that lacks capacity to accept them timely into it. For instance, the nursing program at the University of Alaska Anchorage. We had some students early on identify that even though they were progressing as they should, that there was going to be a break where they couldn't access the program because it was at capacity. So an example of the type of extension that's currently provided for.
And maybe it's here. How much money was awarded in the APS last year? Is that $10 million? Is that on the next sheet, $10,075,849?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and that's kind of a moving target. As students sort of move in and out of their programs of study, we make initial awards presuming that the students are going to be enrolled both fall and spring. That doesn't always happen. So if a student attends fall but doesn't return for spring, then that money is returned back and is basically sits in the pot of money.
And theoretically speaking, an individual could get a UA Scholars Scholarship, an APS Scholarship. Can they get the AEG as well?
Mr. Chair, they could. If you had a very high need, high performing, low income student who would require all three of those components to cover their cost of education, then they could. I believe there's some overlap between the UA Scholars Group and APS. There is fairly minimal overlap between the grant recipient pool and the Alaska Performance Scholarship.
So UA Scholars, it used to be top 10% of your class was eligible for that. Did that change now as a requirement?
Mr. Chair, I can't definitively say. I know at one point the regents were looking at increasing that to 15%. I do not believe that occurred.
So theoretically speaking, you could be in the top 10% of your graduating class, I believe it's grade-wise, but not eligible for the APS if your SATs or ACTs did not meet the minimal threshold.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
So you could be a scholar without being a scholar?
That's correct.
Questions for members of the committee? I guess we go on to AEG.
The Alaska Education Grant is a program that is a needs-based program. One of the differences between that and the Alaska Performance Scholarship that I think is an important one to point out is that it's available to all students who are enrolled in a qualifying program in Alaska. It is not limited to students who graduated after a certain point in time. So,
excuse me, we don't have the information page like we do with the APS for the AEG, do we?
That's correct.
We do. So what are we working off of? Just the last page there? The okay.
Mr. Chair, and my brain.
Well, that's good.
Yes, so the pool, the universe each year of eligible students for AEG is really based on those students who are enrolled in Alaska institutions that complete the free application for federal aid and have been determined to have a high enough need that they could be in the pool for the grant. This past year, there were just under 6,000 students who were applying for the grant through the using the FAFSA, and as you can see in the little info chart that Ms. Peterson has passed out, just less than 2,900 of them were funded through the grant, and that's a function of the availability of funding that's available. As I indicated, similar to the scholarship, these grant numbers are a moving target through the end of the academic year. If a student is awarded a grant and for whatever reason is not attending or no longer is eligible to receive it, that money comes back to the commission. We continue to move down the list of eligible students, making as many awards as we can through the end of the academic year.
So APS is solely state and state funded?
That's correct.
Scholars program is solely UA support and funded?
Correct.
And AEG, tell us one more time where the fund sources come from.
Mr. Chair, it's funded through the same source that the Alaska Performance Scholarship is. The funding, when the legislature set the funds aside into the Higher Education Investment Fund, they were, both programs were pointed towards that fund. So that's the fund source for both the grant and the performance scholarship.
So when you say the capitalization of APS was $440 million, is that the capitalization for APS and AEG is $440 million?
The original capital investment was $400 million. The balance, the outstanding balance at the end of June of 2014 was about $444 million.
For both programs?
Correct.
Okay, that's important for me. So for both programs, it's not two different pots of money.
That's correct. The only other data points I brought along on the AEG is that the percent of eligible applicants that we're able to fund right now is just under 50%. It'll probably creep up a little bit as funds are recycled through, and that those recipients, although we don't have the kind of information on our grant recipients that we have on the performance scholarship recipients, because they are this much broader group of students in terms of their age, when they graduated from high school, whether or not we have information on that. We have confirmed that recipients in the current year come from at least 45 of the 54 districts in Alaska. So a good distribution as those students come to our Alaska institutions.
Questions for Ms. Burns? Senator?
Thank you. Do we have information about how many of the AEG recipients complete their course of study?
Through the chair, Senator Gardner, we do not at this time. That is one of the things that we would expect to be able to report on should the P20W statewide longitudinal data system be available to us.
That's what we call answers?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you. And did I hear you say, if I might, Mr. Chair, that about 50% of eligible students are being funded?
Just shy of that currently, through the chair.
So these are students who did what they needed to do to qualify, but we may or may not be able to help them attend the program they choose?
Through the chair, Representative excuse me, Senator Gardner, having a flashback. That's correct. And one of the points I would add to the chair's question about the fund source for both of these programs, when the legislature established the Higher Education Investment Fund and indicated that the fund would support both programs, it did so with an actual formula in statute that suggested for the total to be expended in a year, two-thirds of that would be allocated to the performance scholarship and one-third would be allocated to the grant program. So that's driven by that statutory formula rather than an analysis of how many eligible students there might be.
Yes.
Thank you. And lastly, so when you can't fund everybody who qualifies and applies, do the first come get the full amount, or is everybody's award reduced according to what's available?
Through the chair, Senator Gardner, it is not a pro rata award. We actually award by greatest to least need. The applicants are sorted. I would tell you that based on legislation that passed in 2014 this fall, we'll be changing that that sorting process somewhat in a way that I think will be beneficial. We'll actually be looking at continuing students as having the same need, but a continuing student having a higher priority for a grant than a student who is not continuing. The idea is we're trying to incent persistence. The amount available for someone who's attending full-time will be greater. And so what we're trying to do is incent, as we do with the performance scholarship, incent and reward the behaviors that we know are highly correlated to completion of a program. So there'll be some change. It will still be needs-based, but there will be some change in the way the applicants are sorted going forward.
Thank you.
Questions? I hope you don't mind. Can I ask you a student loan question?
Certainly.
If for some reason the collateralization, if there was a default on that, let's say the whole process, let's say there was a default, the mechanism would be to that the commission, the corporation, would just do a draw on the general fund without the legislature having to appropriate funds to go into the fund.
Through the Mr. Chair, just to clarify, is this a scenario that assumes there's a general obligation bond issue to fund
the
loan?
Yeah, the moral obligation of the state.
I would actually have to consult with the folks at the Department of Revenue to see what that is. To my knowledge, though, any debt service of the state is paid through a form of appropriation.
Can you double check on that? Because I think there's some discrepancy whether there's actually, it's an automatic draw on the general fund. Mm-hmm. If you could do that.
I certainly can.
Thank you. So, any other questions for Ms. Behrens on the APS, the AEG, or the loan concept that was the first part of our committee meeting today? Super. Anyone online? Anyone in the audience wish to testify? Okay, with that, we are done with this section of the committee meeting, and we're going to be finished with the committee meeting in a moment. Our next meeting is Thursday. We're going to be hearing SCR 1, Civics Task Force, Senator Stevens, and there'll be a presentation on residential boarding schools in the state of Alaska. So with that, this meeting is over.